Chapter 14. Spire Albion, Habel Morning. Grim hated personal combat. Aboard an airship, combat was a tide, a storm, a force of nature. Men died, yes, and it was horrible, and it haunted him. But they died at the mercy of forces so powerful that it hardly seemed a merely human agency could be involved. Most often one never saw the face of the enemy, only his ship, hanging like a model in the sky, often looking quite serene and beautiful. That was an illusion, of course. Pain and death were the reality. But battle was a distant thing in airships, detached, clinical. One pitted one's mind and skill and the heart of one's crew against another captain doing precisely the same thing. One saw what the enemy did to one's own ship. But only rarely did one have a clear, horrible view of what one had perpetrated upon the enemy. Most important, a good commander could make decisions that protected his crew and brought them victory, the ship moving at his will like a single, enormous living being. Personal combat was a very different world. Kettle returned with the majority of the crew within moments, and Mr. Journeyman was waiting to issue weapons and tunics lined with ether silk. The tunics were old, the silk harvested a generation ago at the very latest, and they would be of use only against an indirect blast from moderate range. But they were the best Grimm had been able to find for his men, and they were a great deal better than no armor at all. "We're ready, Captain," Creedy said. The large young man had donned his sword and gauntlet. "Where shall we go?"
"Where there is need," Grimm said. "It stands to reason that..."
He paused as Kettle approached with his sword, its sheath lashed to a baldric. It took a bit of consideration to settle the belt across Grimm's chest so that his sling wouldn't tangle in it, and so his unwounded right arm would be able to draw the weapon.
"Captain," Creedy said, "what are you doing?"
"I'm not about to send the crew somewhere I'm not willing to go, Exo," Grimm replied.
"Thank you, Mr. Kettle."
"Captain,"
Kettle said,
"your gauntlet."
Grimm wiggled his left arm in its sling and sighed.
"I could scarcely aim the thing, I'm afraid."
"Captain," Creedy said,
"you're wounded. You shouldn't go."
"Nonsense," Grimm replied.
Creedy ground his teeth. Then he turned to Kettle. "Mr. Kettle?"
"Sir?"
Kettle asked. There was, Grimm thought, a certain amount of scepticism in the honorific. "As our dear captain is determined to put himself in unnecessary danger, I'm tasking you with the personal responsibility of watching over him. I don't want you more than a step away from him until this is settled. Clear?" Kettle's expression relaxed, and for a moment something almost like a smile graced it.
"Crystal, sir."
"Ah,"
Grimm said.
"I could order you not to do so, you know."
"What's that, sir?"
Kettle asked in an over-loud voice.
"I couldn't quite hear you. My ears, the explosions, you see, sir."
Grimm eyed him, but Kettle remained amiably, apologetically deaf. Creedy's expression was set into a stubborn frown. Grimm looked around and noted other crewmen observing the exchange and sighed.
"Fine, fine."
He gave them both an irritated glare, but his heart wasn't really in it.
"As I was saying, it stands to reason that the boarders won't attempt to land on the spire's roof in the shipyard. There are marines here on duty, batteries, ships, crews. Had they intended an open assault, they'd have landed already."
"Where then?" Creedy asked. "Do you think they're headed for landing?" "A fair question." The enterprising inhabitants of Habel Landing had spent a generation investing in wearing a hole in the spire-stone outer wall of their Habel, and then constructed an airship port of their own, out of wood, on the exterior wall of their level of the spire. Where before there had been only two entrances to Spire Albion, the roof and the base, there were now three. Transport times of goods throughout the many Habels of Spire Albion could be cut in half, and the craftsmen and merchants of the spire had been swift to take advantage of such an opportunity. And now Landing possessed nearly as much wealth as Morning.
Perhaps, Grimm said. But even there, they'd have a real fight on their hands to get in. I believe they'll go in another way.
The ventilation tunnels?
Precisely. They'll get as many of their marines into the tunnels as they can, and set them about the business of weakening Albion from within. Kettle whistled through his teeth.
The mouths to those tunnels aren't but maybe 4 feet by 4, and right on the side of the spire. No ledges or nothing, Captain. Hell of a difficult target for a marine flying a parasail.
Grimm started walking toward the gangplank. Industry and determination, Mr. Kettle, can transform the difficult into the routine, Grimm said. We can assume they'll move from the ventilation tunnels into the side tunnels, and from there proceed to their objectives. There are a number of possible targets for them to assault within Habel Morning, and they may try for the shipyards as well. Our mission is to keep them bottled up in the side tunnels. We needn't hunt them down. I dare say our own marines will be happy to do it once they return.
Grimm looked over his shoulder and saw his crew following him, some of them still buckling their swords and gauntlets into place. Kettle had found most of them in a remarkably short time, 87 men, only 9 short of her full complement. It seemed they had all been together, and rather nearby, to place their bets on that duel. How many, Grimm wondered, would still be alive when the sun set?
Mr. Creedy, pass the word to the officers, if you please. Make sure every single one of them understands our goal, and that I expect it to be met regardless of what happens to the officers or myself. They are to inform the men in their squad the same way.
Aye, Captain, Creedy said, and immediately turned to begin walking backward, speaking in terse tones to the first of the crewmen behind them.
Mr. Journeyman, Grimm called, without turning his head. Aye, Captain. You stay.
An incredulous, absolutely acidic epithet split the air. I believe the phrase you used was jumped up wallypog. If you are too valuable to show proper deference and courtesy to my XO, you're certainly too valuable to risk in a firefight with the roaring marines, Journeyman. That's how it is.
The engineer's ongoing curses faded into the background as Grimm began to trot forward, and his men came with him. They descended a spiral ramp that led from the shipyard to Habel Morning, fighting against confused traffic heading in the opposite direction. The Habel was in chaos. The bombardment from the Auroran destroyers had not struck the Habel directly, but enough of the energy had transferred through the spire stone to dislodge a significant amount of masonry used to buttress and repair the spire's roof. There were screams and the scent of smoke on the air. That was terrifying. If an enemy was lurking, he could be fought, but if smoke began to fill the Habel or its tunnels, it could kill every one of his men without a blade being drawn or a gauntlet discharged. Members of the Spyrarch's guard rushed here and there, rescuing those who had been trapped in the rubble or tending to the injuries of the wounded. It was a dutiful reaction to the crisis, but not a well-ordered one. They moved in small groups of 3 or 4, with no obvious coordination. No one was attempting to direct or calm the traffic on the atrium's streets as far as Grimm could tell.
Sir, Creedy said, pointing.
Grimm swiveled his gaze to the far side of the Habel, where flickers of brilliant white light played intermittently against the far wall, changing the buildings between into black outlines.
Firefight, Grimm said. Good eyes, XO.
Shall we greet our guests?
Without waiting for an answer, he set out at a rather slow, if steady, lope. His arm hurt abominably, but there was nothing for it. Habel Morning occupied the entirety of the spire, most of it beneath a vast atrium nearly 200 feet high, and it was the next best thing to 2 miles from one side of the great cylinder that was Spire Albion to the other. They had to hurry, but arrive with enough breath to aim steadily and ply their blades. The run was like some kind of appalling dream. Most of the buildings seemed little damaged, but occasionally one would appear that had been crushed by falling masonry. The wounded lay on the spire-stoned floor or wandered dazed through the streets. Grim ground his teeth against the need to stop and help a small child who had obviously suffered a broken arm. The poor waif was in agony, but not in danger, which might not be true if the invaders managed to set enough of Habelmorning on fire, or blow up batteries or water gardens, or murder the Spire Council, though Grim had mixed feelings on the sort of loss that might constitute, or any of a number of other acts of war that could have been underway. Perhaps a quarter of an hour passed while they ran, an eternity during any battle. By the time they reached the spot Creedy had seen, Grim had assumed that it would be most likely over. He was mistaken. As they approached, they could hear the howling discharges of gauntlet fire. Grim came to a panting halt just around the corner of a large house, one of the original dwellings from the building, made of spire stone seamlessly fixed to the Habel's floor. The firing came from the other side.
"Stern," he said, fighting to keep his voice steady and calm. "Get a look. Come back quick. No dawdling."
"Captain,"
said a slender, dark-haired man a good many years younger than the average crew member of the Predator. Stern had been a grubby midshipman in the deployment that had ended Grimm's career, and had, against Grimm's express instructions, followed him from the fleet onto Predator. He had remained small and thin as he grew into an adult, and could move as quickly and quietly as any warrior born when he needed to do so. Creedy was blowing hard after the run, his face red.
"Captain," he gasped, "are we where I think we are?"
"Lancaster Vattery," Grim said. "They've come for the crystals."
"God in heaven, if the Aurorans destroy them..."
"Then Fleet will have to fight a war without replacement crystals or additional vessels," Grim said.
Which was, he reflected, saying something very nearly the same as losing a war.
Stern came hurrying back to the group. "The Vattery's made of spire stone," he reported, "so there's no blasting a way in. Lancaster retainers are holding the door so far, but there aren't enough of them to keep it much longer."
"And the enemy?" Grim asked.
"Captain,"
Stern said, his voice worried.
"They're the Spyrarch's guards."
"Nonsense," Grim said promptly.
"Likely they're Aurorans wearing false uniforms."
"How many?"
"I made it 24, but they've taken up positions, sir. They're shooting from cover."
Creedy blinked.
"What? If they want to destroy the Vattery, they should be storming the door, shouldn't they? Every minute they're here makes it more likely that they'll come under attack themselves. Why wait?"
Grim said, and narrowed his eyes, thinking, "Why wait?"
Then he felt his lips bare his teeth in a smile.
"Why indeed? Because they are waiting.
Perhaps they're expecting reinforcements.
Stern, where are they positioned?"
"There's a masonry wall around a little garden between the Vattery and the house, Captain. It's been chewed up by gauntlet fire, but they're using it for cover."
Grim nodded once. "Creedy, take 2 squads and flank them from the far side rear, if you please. I'll take the rest and make sure that the enemy is too busy looking at the near side front to notice you. Don't dawdle now." The XO nodded, pointed to 2 other officers, and beckoned. He started away at a run, and the others followed. Grim turned to the rest of the crew and said,
"These boys are better at this kind of fighting than us. But there are a hell of a lot more of us than there are of them. So we treat this exactly like a boarding action. Aggression, 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 and stay together. God in heaven be with you."
He led his crew to circle the house and enter the field opposite from where Creedy's team would appear. When Creedy got there, he and his men would be behind the Auroran's cover, blasting away at invaders trapped against a stone wall. They would wreak havoc on the foe. Of course, it also meant that the Aurorans would have a very strong defensive position against Grim and his men. But there was no helping that. The howl of gauntlet fire filled the air, the light flashing swift and bright in a thick, deadly curtain of energy. Grim drew his sword, lifted it, and cried,
"Albion!"
The crew's weapons leapt into their hands, and they roared, "Albion!" in furious unison. Grim rounded the last corner, followed by 70 howling aeronauts, and sprinted toward the Auroran position.